Good evening. This is a special presentation on WILL of a town hall meeting concerning the state of the current budget and plans for meeting future budget challenges at the University of Illinois. I'm Jay Pearson. We're coming to you live from Follinger Auditorium on the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus, where Chancellor Richard Herman and Provost Linda Katehi and others will be on stage presiding, delivering information, and answering questions from the audience, students, and other campus community members, employees, faculty members. Among the others who will be on the stage, Jacqueline O'Day, the student body president, Nick Burbles, the chair of the faculty senate, Renee Romano, vice chancellor for student affairs, Tom Quarter, the chairman of the Council of Academic Professionals, Tom Martin, who is the president of the staff advisory council representing civil service employees, and Barney Bryson, who is the president of the State Employees Advisory Council. This town hall meeting follows by a day an email that went out to members of the campus community from University President B. Joseph White that said, in part, the situation in Illinois is this. The revenue shortfall for fiscal year 2008-09 is conservatively estimated to be $2.1 billion, and the state has a $4 to $5 billion backlog in unpaid bills. The leadership situation in the state leaves us without clear direction on how much state-supported budgets may have to be reduced, and we must plan for fiscal year 2010, in which economic conditions will continue to be difficult. The president went on to say, our plan is to handle a rescission by continuing the freeze on all except essential hiring, the freeze that's been in place for the last 3 months, and substantially reducing purchases, travel, and other expenses. We will, the president said, do our best to avoid significant budget-driven layoffs. However, in light of the financial circumstances some units of the university may face, I cannot provide complete assurance, especially if the rescission is large. President White went on to say in his announcement or his message to the campus community, with regard to fiscal 2010 that begins July 1st, 2009, there is substantial uncertainty about what our situation will be. If the rescission deepens, if state revenues decline more, and if there is not help for states and higher education from the Obama administration, fiscal 2010 could be a very difficult year. Should this be the case, there will be great pressure on all our costs at the university, of which 75% are faculty and staff. The president said, I cannot rule out the kinds of actions that we see occurring in some other states now, including voluntary and mandatory furlough days, and I hope these will not be needed, but we will keep you posted as the picture develops. Well, in response to this message, which has caused quite a bit of discussion on the university's campuses, not only in Urbana-Champaign, but also in Springfield and Chicago, each campus has scheduled a town meeting to discuss this budget outlook. And this evening's is the one that will be held on the Urbana-Champaign campus. And as Chancellor Herman and Provost Katehi and others are gathering on stage, and members of the audience are still filing into Follinger Auditorium, we are preparing for tonight's presentation, followed by the question and answer session, and we'll bring it all to you live here on WILL, AM 580, FM 90.9 HD2, and of course online at will.illinois.edu. In addition, if you go to the University of Illinois main website at illinois.edu, you will find links to a video stream of this, and it will also be archived for your future reference. Some of the members of the committee gathered on the stage, some of the representatives of the campus constituencies are now being seated at their positions, and it looks like the chancellor will be moving over to the podium to begin tonight's address. And let's go down to the stage and University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Chancellor Richard Herman.
Okay. Good evening. Thank you for coming to what I hope will be an informative town hall meeting. We are, quite frankly, here to talk with you, not at you. So Provost Katehi and I will provide some information. what we have. We are here to hear from you and promise you transparency and openness as we proceed down this road. Let me first introduce those who have joined us on stage. Student body from your left to your right, student body president Jacqueline O'Day, faculty senate president Professor Nick Berbulis, Provost Linda Katehi, Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs Renee Romano, Chair of the Council of Academic Professionals Tom Corder, State Universities Civil Service Systems Employee Advisory Council President Barney Bryson, and President of Staff Advisory Council Tom Martin. We have tried to have, in some sense, representatives of our entire community up here on the stage to join in this dialogue. I had the good fortune to be at the inauguration of President Barack Obama, and I'm sure many of you watched or heard his stirring speech. And he spoke of the opportunity to get America going again. We are part of that process, as he made abundantly clear when he spoke of restoring science to its rightful place, when he spoke of a stimulus package to the states for infrastructure. We have a building over here called Lincoln Hall, which we hope will be part of that. And he spoke in particular about a $75 billion, I guess he didn't mention it, but there is a $75 billion higher education stimulus program. So as we sit here tonight wondering what next steps we will take, wondering what the state will tell us, and we have some information but not a lot, we know there is enormous opportunity before us. So as we talk tonight, we will try and give you the information we have and respond to your questions. In some sense, there really are three time periods related to the planning and budgeting. We have been asked to set aside dollars in anticipation of an anticipated rescission. This is no old news. Everybody is aware of this. For this fiscal year, that would be an immediate cash rescission, and the provost will talk in some detail about those issues. The possibility remains that any cash rescission or further becomes an FY10, that is next fiscal year, diminution of state funds. But at the same time, there is another period of time. There is the period of time 3, 4, and 5 years from now. This is a time that we need to look to. This is one of the great research universities in the entire country. We defined that concept in the last century, and we darn well should be in a position to continue to lead the nation and the world in this direction. And as we do so, and this is the point, we will need to make investments in areas. And you'll be right to say, well, why did you do that and not this? But at the end of the day, we will make investments with your advice. This is a consensus-building process, not just for the sake of consensus, but to hear, in fact, your thoughts, your priorities, and at the end of the day, we will have to make some decisions. Let me react to a little bit to some news that I didn't see last night, but I was told of the one news program which predicted the sky is falling. And I must say that I arrived at the University of Maryland in 1990 as a dean. And 12 days later, I was asked for 4% of my budget. And believe me, I thought the sky was falling. The 4% turned into 8% over a couple of years. But after 5 years, we came out of it better. When the budget cuts began, I was asked to throw to the dogs the newest of our endeavors, which was a center for superconductivity, because throwing that to the dogs would solve our budget problem in one fell swoop. But that thoughtful endeavor represented part of the collective future of the college and the university. So I refused to do so, and we dealt with the budget cuts in a thoughtful way. The same thing here, I would argue that we're investing in a petascale computer. And we will, this will be not a small cost, but it speaks to the future. It speaks to the kind of innovation and creativity that this campus is known for. And there'll be other things like that. And we need to keep in mind that we will hear from all of you, but we will need to think not about just the here and now, although some decisions will be made based on the here and now, but we will also need to think about the investments we make as we go down the road. Now, while this is not entirely comfort, we are not alone. If I could have the next slide. I guess we have late-breaking news, in a way. It's not great comfort, but it does speak to the national scope of the financial crisis we face. Now, some states are better off than others. I would say, judging by the news I've seen, we are far from the worst. I think of California and Arizona in particular as two states which are in perhaps more dire financial circumstances. Next slide. More broadly, recessions have existed before. 10 since World War II, with an average length of 10 months. You noted the two longest lasted 16 months. I think quite generally we're looking at potentially a longer one. Let me drop that down to the state with the next slide. We have a budget deficit in this state, a structural shortfall. The instability in the economy may cause additional declines in state revenues, to say nothing of the occasional political instability. These issues will have to be addressed. The state is behind in its payments by a couple of billion dollars, and we're affected by that. Expenditures may increase over state appropriations. We have to compete with state mandates and human services. And the argument, I think, properly made is that we are a healthy part of the future, and we need to be, we need investment in our students, in our faculty. We are, at the end of the day, a great engine for the future, not an engine of intellectual development, but certainly an engine of economic development. Frankly, my hope is that the opportunities before us are ones that will occur at the level after World War II, where the GI Bill changed in a very, very positive way the nature of public higher education, where the investment to harness the talent that won the war translated into enormous support for universities. I don't want to sound pie-in-the-sky optimistic, but I do see in the bills and the stimulus packages that are emerging those possibilities, and they are before us, and only you can help help us take advantage of all of them and contribute to the economy of the state and the nation. I'd now like to turn to Provost Katehi for discussions about the impact on our campus.
Well, what we will try to do next is to see exactly how this economic environment translates into, may translate into some constraints for our campus. So, with the economic situation at the state level, we believe that we are looking at a state revenue shortfall of about 7 to 8%. Now, some of the bills the state has to pay need to be paid. The state cannot really cut all the expenditures they have. And so we believe eventually that unless the economic situation in the state improves, that we will have to possibly endure a cut that will be higher than 7 or 8%. We all remember that earlier in the fall semester, IBHE announced a 2.5% cut for higher education. But the economic situation has worsened since then. And so at present, our campus and the university is planning a cut of an order of 10%. Now, this is still, we are in a planning phase. We do not have information that speaks to this 10%. We have just made an estimate that we may face this cut if the economic situation in the state continues the way it has been. I can tell you that this comes at a difficult time for the institution, and I will try to explain why this is a difficult time for us. First of all, you can see that the state had went through a similar financial crisis in 2001. And by then, the state funds to the institution were going down, but somehow at a slow rate. Since 2001, the reductions have been substantial. And what you see from this graph, and this is a graph we have shared with our students earlier this fall semester, the state funding towards student education has really reduced to almost 50% from what it was in 1989. And tuition increases have not been able really to make up for the difference. And of course, that is forcing us to be aggressive in increasing tuition, and that is a situation that concerns us greatly, since we are trying at the same time, while we are trying to protect our programs and our institution, at the same time we try to protect students. And we know that during economic times like this, tuition increases may not necessarily be something we would like to result in. However, in addition to that, I also wanted to say that you remember last year we went through an energy crisis. And that forced the institution to do a very good thing, of course, is to create programs to conserve energy. And those programs have been very successful. Yet, at the same time, as many other institutions, our utilities cost grew very fast. Within a period of 2 years, our utilities grew by almost 30 or 35%. And so during this time, we have found ourselves weakened by, first of all, the reductions in state funding of 2001, and then second, by the increases in utilities last year and the year before. And so the cut that we have to endure, we think we will have to endure in the next year or so, will come at a difficult time for us. And the previous two issues in terms of utilities and previous cuts have really weakened our ability to absorb this cut without resulting into some visible actions. I would like to talk about planning constraints, and we spoke about state funds and, of course, the declining industrial base in the state, the issues the state faces, issues that will remain with the state for a number of years until the economy turns around. We also know that tuition has grown significantly, and we know that we just don't have enough margins there to grow tuition aggressively. Expenses also, we know, as you know, we are an institution of higher education. We educate students. Our assets are people, and therefore 80% of our total cost goes to salaries. We have tried very hard to constrain this cost, and we know that we had to grow our number of students 4 or 5 years ago. That resulted in growing our sections, our courses, the number of faculty, and the number of staff. So the institution has gone through what I would call modest growth overall, but it has really forced us to put more resources into salaries. We are also losing ground in terms of faculty salaries. As you know, our salaries in faculty and high-level staff are controlled by market pressures. And we are trying to be stay competitive as we try to recruit excellent people and retain our own, but we are still losing ground. Utilities, as I said, has been for us an issue, especially with the energy crisis. But the good news is that we have worked very hard to put programs in place and try to make investments both in facilities and energy conservation programs, and the returns of that, we will see them. In fact, we started this year seeing the returns of this effort. Financial aid is very important for us to provide access to our programs. This is a key mission for this institution. And especially during difficult times like this, we need to be very thoughtful and very mindful of the difficulties of the students to support their education, and therefore we will need to make some major investments in that particular area. We have this specific graph is to explain to us how our revenue sources contribute to the various activities we have on campus. And one specific characteristic of those revenue sources is that we cannot mix and match them. For example, from here, I will just need to go around and explain. The green one is state appropriations, is what we call GRF. Tuition is the light blue. Then we have institutional funds, which is the overhead that comes to us from research. We have grants and contracts, that's the yellow. We have gifts and endowments, purple. We have other departmental activities that bring very specific funds, that's the light yellow. And then we have auxiliary enterprises and the funds they bring in to cover their cost. One characteristic in all of this is only state appropriations and tuition are two sources of revenue that we can mix to some degree. And that's why reductions in state appropriations have forced us to grow tuition. But we cannot take funds in the other categories and use those funds to cover deficits or shortages that may have in state appropriations and tuition. And I would like to just describe this to you, because then sometimes you will hear that we got this major grant from this federal agency to do something very important, and then yet for us this may not necessarily help us very much to cover the 10% cut from the state. So how are we meeting this challenge? I have to repeat what Chancellor Herman said, that this is a time of challenge, but at the same time, it's a time of great opportunity for our institution. It is very interesting to see that, but I can tell you it is during this time and maybe the next 2 years when higher education will receive the most funds that we have seen in the last 20 or 25 years. So it is critical for us, as we try to address the challenge that we face, to also stay focused and try to compete for these funds that eventually will make our institution a better place. But going back to the challenge, we have decided to guide ourselves with our values. And our strategic plan speaks extensively about the values of our institution, the land grant mission, and the students, our students being the center of this organization. We have decided to really highlight the three values that guide us: our effort to protect the quality of our programs, our core programs. We have to be good stewards of this institution. The fact that the University of Illinois has been at the quality that we have all enjoyed is because many people for many, many years have worked very hard, and they have devoted their lives and their careers. And we have the responsibility to make sure that this quality continues. We would like to protect our students, serve them well, and also provide access. As we said, one key component of our mission is to educate the public in the state. And then, of course, we need to protect our people. These are the three values that will guide us. In terms of specific actions for anticipated budget reductions, last year, even the state announced an increase to our budget, we knew that the financial situation did not look very good. And we decided to ask our units to put aside 1.5% of their budget, knowing that if the economic situation continues, then we will have to use that towards a possible rescission. And so in case we have to send money back to the state, we will use this 1.5%. We have also decided to protect our students. You remember, this is one of our values. Since we are facing GRF cuts, then we have decided to not penalize the students and use tuition to pay back to the state. So GRF cuts will come from GRF-funded activities, and specifically GRF-funded activities that have limited impact on student learning will be impacted the most. The additional thing about FY10, previous experience with how the state addresses situations like this are telling us that if we have a rescission for this year, then we will see the same cut permanently next year. And so we have two separate sets of actions in place. We are planning on two separate sets of actions, one to address rescission, possible rescission for this year, and the other set is to address the permanent cuts for next year. And in all of these, we have made a commitment not to accept deficits. And why is that? Because deficits can only weaken the institution further. Deficits do move the problem from today to tomorrow, and as they move the problem to a later time, make the problem worse. And so we have decided to really manage our resources thoughtfully. As Chancellor Herman said, we will ask for your input along the way, and we will try to be very mindful of the issues that our people face and of the critical needs that we have on our campus. In terms of short-term actions, as we prepare forward, we have decided to limit our hires only to those critical positions, positions which are important to our students, to their programs, and to the services we provide. And for every hire, I have and Chancellor Herman have to approve those, so we have a very good control in place. We have decided to limit travel to only those instances where people travel for development, so in order to raise money, raise funds, whether those are personal gifts from alumni or gifts from and funds from corporations or research funds from the federal agencies. We have decided to defer purchases and new services unless we have critical needs. And also, as Chancellor Herman said, we have decided to make critical investments to allow the institution to compete for funding. As I said, during this critical time, we have tremendous opportunities, and we need to be prepared to be able to compete for them. And we should not allow ourselves or allow those challenges to blind us, but we should try to stay focused and also look at the opportunity. Finally, for long-term actions, as you know, the institution is going through a 5-year strategic plan. And the bottom line in this plan, we have committed ourselves to making the institution a better place. There are a number of things we need to do, And the plan looks many times at the outcomes of decisions we need to make, but a lot of work has to be done for these outcomes to be accomplished. We need, as an institution, to be more flexible, to provide better quality of service, and to do that at a lower cost. This is how we are going to protect our students. This is how we are going to protect our programs. So we have started a series of activities, and those were not necessarily triggered by the financial challenges of today. Those activities were planned through our strategic plan, and we have had those in mind. Of course, there is no better time than going through these changes and through these activities right now and efforts. So the first thing, and you may have heard about this, we are looking at information technology on our campus, and we are trying to rethink information technology for the future. So I try to make sure that we create an organization, an IT organization, that provides support to our campus, but does it with much higher quality at a lower cost. We're looking at service centers. We try to find ways to minimize cost while we provide better service. We're looking at process improvement. All institutions of higher education have become very bureaucratic over time. This is not just a characteristic of the University of Illinois. But we think that for us to be a better place, we need to rethink of our business on how we execute our activities and how we provide support to our students and staff and faculty. And finally, in energy conservation, I spoke about this earlier, but we have done a lot of work that is paying back. And we are very proud for what we have in place and for the plans that we have moving forward. So with that, we are going back to Chancellor Herman.
I think that's more or less the formal part of the presentation. But by the way, how many people here are students? Very good. Academic professionals, civil service, faculty. This is great. A good representation. And I think that's what you see up here on stage, because I think the only way, not just to survive, and we're not just after survival or holding the course. Okay, Therein lies the route to become less. We are after figuring out how to take advantage of some of the opportunities that both the provost and I have spoken to. But the only way that is going to happen is by the kind of, dramatic coalitions that are represented by your presence here in the audience and that are represented up here on stage. It will take all of us. And some people are going to figure that out, and some are not. And those who figure it out first are, in fact, going to emerge stronger. And that is the plan. You know, this is probably a deeper recession than that which we've encountered in the past. But that only suggests that the road will be just a little bit longer. But we need to find that road, and we need to find it together. Few absolute decisions, in fact, have been made. And we are about to begin a process here. Well, I say about to begin, that's not quite right, because there's been a lot of consultation going on already. But we're continuing a process here tonight in hearing from you. So there are two mics. I see one. I think there's one over there in the aisles. We want to hear from as many people as possible. So please come and use one of the floor mics, and in respect to the rest of your colleagues, we'd like you to limit your comments, questions to 2 minutes. And please, while you may have many questions, let somebody else come before you. So I see the first individual. Please introduce yourself if you care. Well, come on up, and let's have a conversation.
Hi, Chancellor Herman.
How are you?
My name is Dan Weber. I'm in our Student Senate. You may remember me, right? Yeah.
I think so
One important issue, obviously, that was mentioned during the presentation is energy conservation. It was down at the bottom of the slide. And sustainability, obviously, is a huge issue because not only will it help reduce our carbon footprint, but can save us a great deal of money. While Facilities and Services recently added a second team of energy audit team to go over these things, I think one of the problems facing Facilities and Services is a lack of capital with which to make these changes. One idea I proposed, or I mentioned before, and I've asked Provost Katehi about, is the possibility of using a portion of our endowment to create a revolving loan fund to support sustainability projects. What are your views on the feasibility of this, and do you think this is a possibility?
First of all, objective level, I think it's an excellent idea in the sense that Facilities and Services has done a wonderful job in reducing energy costs with small investments. There's a lot of, if you will, low-hanging fruit where you make an investment and 6 months later you recoup those dollars, which is exactly your point. And there are many other things to discuss along these lines. We do engage in discussions with the foundation along these lines of the potential to invest here. But you also need to recognize that the endowment funds have, as everywhere, taken an enormous hit. Now, in that particular regard, we are in a better position than private institutions. Oddly enough, you would cite Harvard as having invested in this. But about between 40 and 50% of their operating budget relies on endowment spend out. So in that regard, we're better off. But we did take a rather large loss in endowment. So right now, the foundation is examining what its best investments are. So I can't give you a positive answer. It's being discussed, but I think FNS has done a great job, and I think Provost Katehi would be happy to supply some additional details. But Dan, so it's a great suggestion. It's a question of whether we can, what the right use of the endowment funds are. Don't forget they support scholarships for students here.
Scholarships are good.
That's good. They support professorships and chairs to keep the great faculty here, which is, why many of you came here to study, right? So I think we've never had the kind of endowment that Harvard had, I say, with no glee, by the way, because what affects them affects us all. But we've never had that kind of flexibility. And hopefully, and in fact, I should introduce Jim Schroeder. Jim, if you'd raise your hand. Sitting right here, he's our Vice Chancellor for Institutional Advancement and doing a great job in helping us reach our goal of raising $1.5 billion in this campaign. Yet at the same time, we need to recognize that constrained environment. So a long answer, Dan, but I wish it were otherwise. I just can't say yes at the moment.
Thank you.
Sure. Why don't we alternate sides?
I'm Charles Blair from the Business Administration Department. I noted with interest the Information Technology at Illinois program listed on one of the slides. Two goals stated for that program are cost savings and improvement of security. I would like to suggest that the active encouragement of free software, things such as the Linux operating system, might be useful with both goals.
Okay, I think it's working now. It is improving quality of service. Maybe security is part of this. I just wanted to say that. But you're absolutely correct. Providing better service in IT does imply a number of different things for our community. This activity is underway, and Sally Jackson, who is our campus CIO, is leading the activity and is working with a group of 50 people. If you are interested, if you have ideas, my advice will be to email her and get involved. There is a lot of interest in getting involvement from people as they develop the concept right now. Thank you.
David King, Transportation Shop, Facility and Services Division. And my question is in regards to the uncertainty of today's economy, do you see the face of the workforce here at the university changing permanently?
That's a difficult question to give an answer to, in the sense that I wish, in fact, that the state financial situation had resolved itself, in that we had a number. Right? How would we deal with it? You know, many things are under discussion, and you've certainly heard the word, for instance, furloughs being discussed. In other words, is it possible for us all as a community to take furloughs to preserve people's jobs? So there are many things on the table. What is it? Yogi Berra was saying the past is easy to predict, right? So we are in an uncertain future, and I wish I could offer words like evil is abolished and paradise is restored, but the simple truth is we don't know what that future is, and I'm not going to speculate on it, Dave. That's not to minimize your concerns and the concerns of I suspect you're speaking for everyone in the audience. Right? I think, as Provost Katehi noted, we are taking actions to minimize risk, such as leaving open unfilled positions, except where absolutely necessary. And Linda, you want to?
I also wanted to say that there have been very extensive discussions, and our HR group is involved. Ellen Cole, the Associate Provost for Human Resources, right here, right up front. And she has been involved with many other people in discussing a number of ideas, as we said. One of the three priorities we have is to protect our own people. And so we're talking about redeployment on our campus. Obviously, as in any good organization, programs come and go, new opportunities are created, and it is critical for our people to be able to move from one program to another and work effectively. And so we are talking extensively about training opportunities on our campus. And so Eileen can provide more information about programs we already have in place. In fact, the campus is not new in dealing with challenges. As you know, in 2001, we went through a similar one, a little smaller in size. There are programs in place to help employees, but we will pay a lot of attention to redeploying our own and trying also to provide training opportunities.
Thanks, Dave.
Transparency.
Hello, Benjamin Johnson from the College of Veterinary Medicine. I'm an academic professional in the IT department out there. I did note with some great interest the IT at Illinois things that are going on, but I'd like to see it go higher. I'd like to see at the chancellor and the provost level saying there will be one common email calendar enterprise type system at Illinois in 6 months or a year, and the resources need to be there to do it, the human resources to do that, the funding resources to do that. It may also involve changing some cost models so it's not dropped down to the individual, $5 a month to do this, $10 a month to do that. I think that would make a great statement and also put us a level above our peers and trying to recruit professors, saying it's nice that everybody has 20 instances of Moodle running or 50 instances of Exchange Server running, but as an enterprise-class university, I think it should be fairly feasible in at least a year to make that move at a high level and see it shake down from there.
I mean, I think this really is the purpose of the strategic planning process in IT that the provost has engaged Sally Jackson, but I'm going to let her speak to.
I wanted to say that is one of the few and or many, I should say, specific actions we would like to take. Just to give you a timeline, we expect close to the end of March to have a concept that will describe this new organization. And then we are going to be in a position to say, these are our goals. We are going, this is of course, there are specific things we will do, and I believe our IT people are extremely excited with the prospect of creating a a new organization that will really propel the institution forward.
Excellent.
But we will make that statement, and we will. We are waiting, of course, for the experts to tell us how to do this and create a concept that we will take forward for implementation.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Jay Rosenstein. I'm on the faculty of the Department of Journalism. Hello, Chancellor.
Hi, Jay.
Provost, I have a question. You mentioned that one of the goals is to protect our core programs. The way I heard that is that you meant our core academic programs. What are our core programs?
I talk about core programs, and I can tell you that every college will have a unique set of core programs that are important to them. Of course, when we talk about programs, we mean education, research, and engagement. And in fact, they're not separate, as you know. I mean, for the institution of our quality, all of these are integrated in many unique activities. And so we will ask the colleges to focus on strengthening the programs that provide the basic education to their students, the programs they are proud of. And then also take a very critical view at all of their programs and make sure that the ones we keep in place, if we have to select, we keep the ones that add value to our students, to their learning, and to us as an institution. And this is not a list my office is going to create. Is a list that the colleges with their departments will be asked to create. And we will work off those lists.
If I can add one thing to that, like many people in this audience, I've been through more than one of these things. They're not pleasant to go through. But if there's one good thing from an academic standpoint, is that it creates an opportunity or a need to re-examine that question of what are our core activities. And universities are institutionally very conservative, not politically, but institutionally very conservative. We don't really like change. And the natural impetus is to do pretty much the same thing from year to year, trying to do it better, but not really re-examining whether a program that we've had for 20 years or 30 years or 40 years might be equally relevant or not as equally relevant over the next 20 or 30 years, and maybe something that we're not doing that we should be doing. And so in this process of re-examination through the colleges and departments, it's one of the ways in which we can come out of this process better if we really thoughtfully reflect on what are our core activities and how are they changing as we look to new students, a new job market, and new opportunities in the future. And if we do that in the thoughtful and planful way, we really can benefit from it. And I've seen that happen in the past.
Hey, let me add one brief comment. One is that there was a time when this place was known as the Illinois Industrial University, okay? We are not seeking a return to that time. This university is appropriately comprehensive in terms of the many pockets of excellence that exist, whether that be in the professional schools, the sciences and technology, the humanities, and the arts. I think the process described, in fact, is not going to be a simplistic one where you put each department in one of four boxes, we've all read page one of that book. This is a thoughtful one where, you know, things get discussed and people bring ideas to the table and we decide how to go forward together. Decisions will be made, but only after serious discussions. And let me just to reemphasize, there is no a priori list, which is a point that the provost has made. And let's see, Jay was here, please, over here.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Bigelow. I'm a regional director for AFSCME Council 31. AFSCME represents about 2,000 employees on this campus. And I'd like to point out that in your introduction to this panel and in describing the panel, you said that it was very representative, and I'm sure there are many distinguished people on that panel. But it's not really fully representative. It's not representative of any of the unions out here who do all the work on campus. So we appeal to you to think about that in the future, that if we're really going to be all united, then we all have to be at the table working together to try to come to a common solution. And when times are tight like this, and I've seen it myself in the past, I'm not saying that this is happening right now here at this place at this time, But when times are tight, it's frequently the case when that people in power often play different groups against each other. I want to make it very clear that from our point of view, from AFSCME's point of view, we are working for solutions that do not pit students, the interests of students, against the interests of workers. We're not here to pit the interests of one department against another department. We're here to find a solution that will work for all. And in terms of that, I want to also mention that you've described many things about the economic crisis and the financial crisis. The economic crisis is very real, very real. But you've talked about how it's going to hit here in sort of vague terms, really, about what the core services are, what the essential things are for the students that are going to be saved by implying that other things are going to be let go. Well, we need to really figure out what those things are that are going to be let go and who's going to be let go. You've talked about layoffs. You've talked about furloughs. And all of us got to be sacrificing to save the jobs for some. Well, we think that if you've given thought to that, you ought to give thought to this. The people on the bottom, the people who really are the core of this university, the people who make this university work, we need to have some principles up there that say no layoffs, no furloughs, no cutbacks for them, none for the students either. And one other thing, in terms of describing the crisis and how it's going to hit us, I didn't hear anything about describing the crisis and how we're going to avoid it. What steps are we going to take together to lobby in D.C.? And we have a national organization. We lobby in D.C. We're glad to work with you in D.C. to get some more money there. We want to lobby with you in Springfield. We have a lobbying operation there. We want to get as much as we can for the university, and we want to work together to do that, but I didn't hear that, really, about working together. I didn't hear if this is a problem about money, and you want to look at the hard issues, and you want to look ahead 5 years from now. What are you doing? What's the university doing, the leadership of the university doing, to join with us to get the legislature to pass bills to increase revenue? Increase revenue. Talk about taxes. Talk about the people, taxing those people who have some money to do it. We want to make sure that there's equity and fairness in this. We want to make sure there's openness. We want to make sure there's inclusion. We want to make sure that the students are protected, and we want to make sure the workers are protected, and we will not stand for layoffs or furloughs. Thank you.
Jeff, I think it's a noble sentiment and one which we intend to act on. You will note that I never use the phrase called, and no one at this table would use a phrase about people on the bottom. Because at the end of the day, whatever the solution is, and we, you know, I'd like to say we have some specific solutions, but we don't even know what the budget cut will be. Okay. So it's very hard to talk about specifics without knowing extent. And extent makes it, having been through two of these and having helped institutions emerge stronger, and that's experience that's sitting right here at the table. In fact, we will find a way to do it together, but you can't shoot in the dark and write solutions which don't make any sense right now.
By the way, I spent 20 years at the University of Maryland organizing the workers there, negotiating the contracts. I know about the cuts you're talking about. Right. I know about the future that you talked about. It was so much better when 100 programs were cut and hundreds of workers were let go. It wasn't so beautiful for them.
Yeah. A different time. Anyway, next speaker.
Okay. Hi, good evening, everyone. My name is Zach Popple, graduate student. Most recently, I've taken a second job to pay for fees and had some discussions with undergraduate students that won't be able to afford tuition here. So that's just, and I live in Champaign. My question does relate to something that you had mentioned in your introduction about your time at Maryland as a dean, because I know right now, the graduate college has a new dean, and the LAS is a new dean, so we're great to have them here. But I'm wondering what type of orientation they're receiving as they enter into this budget climate. So sort of what priorities are they given at the dean level in order to handle things that we're talking about here today? And I'd love to hear from all the panelists or for them to chime in, yeah.
The deans work with me as members of what we call the Council of Deans. they come prepared, as a matter of fact. When we select deans for critical, for of course these positions, which are important positions, during the selection process, their previous experience is very important. So we do not put people in those positions who have not had previous experience. So that is number one. But second, the deans and I work very closely in that Council of Deans is our policy body, if you like, for our campus. They are the academic leaders. We work together. They have been, they know what I know, what the chancellor knows. They know it with us at the same time, and they work with us to try to address the issues, understand the issues, and then find solutions. And so they are in an excellent position to address the issues, and we, both the chancellor and I, and the rest of the university leadership, of course, trust them immensely in their ability to make the right decisions.
Their decision-making power sort of remain the same since as it was last year, or are they sort of given more decision-making power in this climate?
The deans do have an absolute power in running their own colleges, and their decisions are defining. They are making the decisions. What the council is trying to do is to help us all understand the problem collectively and make sure that the deans make decisions in ways that empower the colleges rather than weaken them. And so, but they are running their own colleges.
The new dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences was, Ruth Watkins, was associate dean in the College of Applied Health Sciences. She was in the provost's office for 5 years, I think. And so she brings to that a large experience set. The dean of the, I don't know, Ruth, are you in the audience? And Deborah Duda.
Dean of the graduate school is right here
with a large experience set at the University of Michigan, which, shall we say, has had its financial ups and downs over a period of years. So I think, you know, the deans are chosen because of their ability to bring ideas and creativity and some experience to this, to a variety of situations. I know the Senate is involved in helping us choose the deans. This is part of shared governance.
That is one thing I think I'd like to add is that I was going to say this at some point. One of the things that, speaking for the Senate, I don't like to speak for the Senate, but from my position, I've been really pleased by the openness of the Chancellor and the Provost and the campus administration to involving the Senate and Senate committees as active partners in this process. And there are a lot of more discussions and conversations to have. The Provost is coming to the Senate meeting on February 23rd. But to be honest, so I think at the campus level, shared governance is very strong at this university, and that represents both faculty and student concerns. What I'm actually less sure about is how that shared governance breaks down to the college level. And my assumption is that in some colleges it's very strong and in other colleges it's very weak. I think deans do have a tremendous amount of power, but I think that faculty and students through college level and department level governance bodies can also help them to make wiser decisions. And I hope shared governance stays as strong at the college and department level as it is at the campus level.
You know, the this is a critical phrase that gets mentioned time after time here, and it means something at this institution. You know, Jacqueline here, I don't know whether you want to say anything, but she, as a student representative, has come. We meet regularly. She's come to the Board of Trustees to talk.
Yes, we have a very good relationship with the administration, unlike some of our Big Ten counterparts, which we're very pleased with. We also, as students, we have a seat. We have several seats. We have 50 seats approximately on our faculty senate. Several of our Big Ten counterparts have one, maybe two seats. So we're very pleased to share in the endeavor and decision-making process. Speaking to the deans in particular, students on student government have had an opportunity to voice concerns with both the new deans of the Graduate College and LAS, and we're looking forward to a close relationship working with them in the transition.
Anybody on the other end of the table wants Tom?
I'd just like to say that, you know, my tenure on the Staff Advisory Council we have become more and more involved with the administration. We've been asked more and more of our opinions, and to be asked to be involved in this, I think, is unprecedented. The only thing I could ask everybody is to just wait and listen. I don't think it's a time for panic right now. They, I think, have been pretty open and honest with us in that they don't know what's going to happen yet, and I think that as soon as they know, they will start to let us know. But other than that, we really just need to keep doing our work every day and take care of this place like we always have.
That was Tom Martin, the president of the Staff Advisory Council representing civil service workers on campus.
Hi, Anthony Larson, Vice President of Students for Environmental Concerns. Like everyone else in this room, we're also worried about the university's budget shortfalls and the implications that has on the outstanding academic reputation of this university. But even in these difficult times, it's important that we remain focused on our environmental and economic sustainability. And oftentimes, especially now, we're finding that those are very much interlinked. I would like to point out, we touched on the utility of cost overruns this past couple of years. Those totaled something of $117 million. Now we are in deficit, and that's money that's sorely needed at this time. My question to you is, how will the university avoid this kind of one mismanagement, rising energy costs, and the new burden of a petascale computer that you talk about?
So several things, and I think this will be a shared answer. But you'll see that I announced some time ago an effort to return to 1990 levels of usage, of energy usage. And frankly, we're well on our way, thanks to some wonderful people in facilities and services, and thanks, even though we didn't get the foundation to invest in helping to fix buildings. We have fixed a fair number of buildings, and the return on investment has been about 6 months.
And exactly.
With the 20% energy reduction. One of the buildings we opened up here, which is actually setting the pace probably for the entire nation, in terms of business facilities, is our new business instructional facility, which uses about 40% less energy than a standard building on this campus of its size. We're trying to redo Lincoln Hall in an energy-efficient way. I think there are many, many such efforts underway along these lines. And, of course, in the longer term, you'll know well that we have a vast energy project underway. We're leading the nation in the use of water, for instance, through efforts in the College of Engineering and linked with other areas on campus. I know, Linda, do you want to add other things?
I'd like to speak about the petascale computers,
right,
since there was reference made to it. It is a research project and also an educational project, because we develop a program on petascale computing. It is true that this computer is very powerful and will require a lot of energy, but the National Science Foundation that has provided the funds for its development and usage and the cost for running it will also cover the cost of the utilities for the computer.
Well, I would ask you to put that money to better use by making reductions on campus.
Well,
the money from the National Science Foundation?
Well, make an equal commitment by this university.
That is one area where I tried to explain earlier that we do not have that much flexibility in using funds that have been dedicated to specific research projects, and we cannot take those funds for other things. Obviously, as we manage our own financial situation and we reach that level where we can make our own operating funds available for sustainability projects, we will do that, but we cannot use research funds for other purposes.
So it'll either be paid for by inefficiency down the road, or you can put the money up front today. I would ask the university to make that kind of commitment.
Look, the issue is where the funds come from. Do we take, we've got 80% of the money in personnel. At the department level, it's 92-93%. Do we ask the departments to take away support for students? Do we, as a university, decide to take away monies which we devote to scholarships to keep the doors open? Now, look, it's not either or. We all understand that. And we are in discussions with companies which we hope will, in fact, help us provide resources to invest. It might not be the foundation, University of Illinois Foundation, but there are ESCOs which engage in this sort of activity, which help institutions, corporations save energy by investing and then taking some share of the return. So your point about your point is well taken. It's a question of where to find the resources from.
If every time we make a suggestion, you say we can't afford it, why should we keep making suggestions?
But my point is that we are acting on that suggestion.
Okay.
All right.
My only other point would be that this isn't a matter of choosing students.
If you want to speak, you come to the microphone, okay?
This isn't a matter of choosing students or faculty over anything else. We're all in this together. We might as well plan for the long term. Thank you, Chancellor.
Very good. Thank you. Please, over here.
Dorinda Miller, president of AFSCME 3700, that represents almost 1,525 clericals here on campus. With all due respect, Chancellor Herman, you said that nobody up there mentioned the bottom people at the campus. Well, you did. You talked about the service centers and how you were going to minimize what is spent on support services.
Yeah.
It was on your slide. When our union first joined together and became a unified entity here on campus, we had close to 2,000 secretaries and clericals here on campus. We now have 1,525. The student population has risen. Often, the secretaries here on campus are the first person that the students have a relationship with. They're the ones that take the place of mom because mom's not here. They're the ones that hear the tears when the boyfriend's broken up with them. But yet, we're here to support. But yet, you're talking about creating what we see as clerical pools again and cutting the bottom tier.
Yeah.
Now, we just recently organized the Child Development Lab employees, who are the lowest paid here on campus. These people are treated with no respect. They were expected to work off the clock. The university did nothing until the union came in and said, we're here to help you. Now, we're here to help the university, but the university has to treat us at the lower rung with the respect that they treat the faculty.
Fair enough. Actually, I didn't know about the CDL since I was responsible for doubling its size when I was provost. But I know it also that it is true, and I'm going to ask Linda to speak to this a little bit, that the academic professional ranks have also grown at the same time as those ranks have, as your ranks have decreased. And you know, I think let me be clear. I mean, we do have to examine all decisions, and that's why we're grateful to hear from you at this point. But at the same time, many of those decisions have been made in a localized way. But I will tell you, one of my own experiences or knowing about a shared service center in the modern language building, that has been, it was difficult to create, but in fact has worked quite well. But let me turn to the provost or some of the others at the table.
So in terms of what we call supporting staff for our campus, the numbers have grown. Of course, you're looking at one category, but when we look across the board, we have seen increased numbers. And in fact, the numbers of our staff have grown, I would say, a lot more than the growth that we have seen in students or faculty. Now, the reason that people have been hired in different categories is because the support that is needed to our institution has changed over time. And so there are more responsibilities assigned to different individuals, and therefore you will see that over time the categories have changed. We said that we really want to protect our own people. At the same time, I think it is our responsibility as we do that to always be mindful of the cost that this institution presents to our students. And so our task, which is difficult, is to reduce this cost so we don't have to keep increasing tuition to levels that students cannot afford, while at the same time we provide the quality of service that is needed for an institution of this quality. As we do that, personally, I would like to see, in fact, if we have the choice for that, to introduce training programs which will allow people to move from one position to another. As we eliminate positions because they may not be very effective for the institution and create other ones, we would like to see people having the opportunity to retrain themselves and then be redeployed. I mean, this is absolutely critical for our institution. We cannot keep structures in place that have been developed for 20 years ago and then try to continue because the cost of those structures is very high. And so we are trying, in fact, under the good circumstances, without, if, say, the state were to come tomorrow and would say that we are not going to have a cut, I can tell you that we could make that change without having people losing their positions. In fact, we would allow attrition to take place and over time to make those changes in a way that is without creating, I would say, problems to individuals. Of course, without knowing exactly what the situation will be at the state level and how this is going to translate to us in terms of cuts, we have a very general discussion today. But again, you need to remember that this institution does care about people. And whatever we do will put people first. And of course, people include everyone in our community, our students, our staff, and our faculty.
I'd like to make one final comment, and that's that we do have a very good working relationship with the academic professional group here on campus. But, however, we feel that because they don't have a contract and haven't been recognized on campus, our jobs have been taken and given to them because they don't have a contract, they don't have a solid voice, and they don't have to negotiate the wages at a table with the university like we do. We feel that our jobs have been cut, and yes, the academic professionals have increased, and we encourage them to continue their efforts to organize. Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, good evening. I'm Jenny Barrett. And I'm an academic professional in the Department of Psychology. And Dorinda brought up a very good point. But I'm here because, as the chair of the Association of Academic Professionals, a number of colleagues have approached me and asked me to be sure to convey the following message they wanted out there. Before, if you have to take drastic measures, such as layoffs or furloughs, and we hope it doesn't come to that, but if you have to, can you please, I urge you, to set a positive example and forego bonuses and maybe not... and also forego your raises, because I know that won't solve the total crisis, right. But it would save some jobs, and it would be a very good gesture. It would be very good for morale. And since I brought up the F word, furloughs, I hope it doesn't come to us having to take furloughs, but people have pointed out to me that some of them are single parents and they really cannot afford to take days off without being paid. And if we do have furloughs, maybe it should be voluntary, or if it's not voluntary, have it mandatory for people who make $100,000 or more, or even $70,000 or more. But... So I guess my question is, have you considered freezing bonuses or wage increases? Has that been discussed?
The answer is yes, but let me point out, I'm not sure if there's anybody on this campus that gets bonuses.
I mean, you get retention bonus.
There are salary increases,
right,
in response,
yeah,
to specific circumstances.
Yeah, because we know President White has a retention bonus.
Yeah.
But all of that, which you have considered,
which you have put up is in fact being discussed. But again, it depends on what situation we're precisely facing. And you're right, the actions you've spoken of don't generate the size dollars to address the size of the solution, the size of the problem we might be facing, but in fact they have large symbolic value and do speak to the noble sentiment which you put forward, that we are all in this together. Okay, so I thank you for that, and I don't know whether others around the table, Tom Corder, would you, as a head of the Council on Academic Professionals?
Well, I guess I would just say that I would encourage people to reach out to however they can to get involved. Nick talked about shared governance in the Senate. We're here representing, the other groups, the staff and the academic professionals. Reach out to those organizations and get involved. I've been on the council now. I'm in my second term. We've had terms where people didn't run for office in certain areas, and we had to go out and beat the bushes and find them. So if you're that concerned about the issues, run for those seats and get involved. Come to our meetings. Our meetings, I suspect the staff's council meetings are also open to the public, are open to any AP to come. This spring, as every year, the provost and the chancellor and the president have agreed to come and speak to us and talk to us in those forums. So come to those forums and talk to them. There are different ways. You can belong to a union, that's great. But there are these other ways, too, to get involved. So that's what I would suggest.
Okay, I guess I count my... We're about 7:10. We're certainly happy to stay a little longer, but I guess I count myself in giving long answers to short questions. So maybe the question and the answers can be a little crisper. Please.
Thank you very much. My name is Jim McGuire, and I'm president of ASME 698. We've been on campus over 60 years. There's over 400 members. We have a contract with the university to represent those members. And due deference to my friends Tom and Barney, they come to me and our executive board when they want representation. The last couple of days, when they read the letter that talked about significant layoffs, they've been asking about seniority lists. I'm sure the community in this county are also concerned, including businesses, because of those comments that came out in that letter. I wish we would have had the opportunity to discuss these issues with the administration. I think we should have had the opportunity. I think at least Jeff and I know Henry Bear would have liked that opportunity more before that information came out. We'd like to be able to work with you to fix these issues. I was wondering about some of the numbers that came up tonight. I haven't heard of a 10% rescission. I know we have a governor who doesn't really like this university. He's asked for a 2% rescission. The provost has put out that's $18 million. I don't know of any other rescission that's going to happen. I think the governor may not make it through the next month, and maybe he'll be gone. We won't have to worry about that. I know there's going to be a recession, and we're in the middle of it, and we have to worry about those things, and we'll have to work through that. I think we have a much better chance. We're a great university, and we can do that together, and we will do that. Maybe things like Global Campus shouldn't be looked at rather than...
Yep. All right.
Laying people off and talking about those things. So I'm ready when you are to sit down and talk about these issues. The rest of us will be too. And thank you.
Let me just add, I don't know whether anybody at the table would like to say something, but let me just say that, first of all, there are very few, if any, decisions that have been made and set in stone simply because we don't know what a budget cut would be like. Second, everything goes on the table. And it only comes off the table for good reasons. And so if discussions to this point have not involved you or Jeff. They will, but let me emphasize, we will have to deal with the rescission, if it happens, of short-term funds, but then we also have to worry about FY10, and there's a planning process underway. That's why we're here tonight, so thank you for your comments.
Hi, my name is Kerry Pimblot. I am a graduate student. I'm also a teaching assistant, which means that I'm also part of the graduate employees organization. I'm actually the co-president, and we represent, I believe, 2,500 people on campus, maybe more than that. I wanted to just quickly say that it seems kind of rude to say it, but I get paid less than $14,000 a year, and it's difficult to live on, and it's hard to not believe that you're the bottom rung at the university. I feel that way. And so my question to you would be, in light of the last couple of points that were made from some of the union leaders, is would you be willing to make one of your core values protecting working class people on campus first, protecting the lowest paid workers on campus before you start making some of these priorities about furloughs, who you ascribe those to, make them come from the top first, not from the bottom. So would you be willing to do that, make that one of your core values, protect the lowest paid workers?
So at the end of the day, I think we have to figure out a way to all share to some extent. But my own inclination
there's
is...
There's not much there with my budget, I'll be honest.
I understood your point, having been a graduate student, okay? Let me say my inclination is to have, as we go down this road, is to have some reflection in the actions by what you have said. However, if I were to say that, you and I would probably not have the same exact solution, but... As a principal, I do believe that those who are more capable should perhaps contribute a little more.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sohail Barot. I'm a graduate student in electrical engineering and chair of the Student Sustainability Committee. I'd like to clarify some of the things that you mentioned in response to one of the other questions on energy. A large number of the projects that you mentioned regarding saving energy and reducing the amount of money that we spend on utilities on this campus, most of that is funded from student fees. They're funded by the AMFMA fee, they're funded by sustainability fees on this campus, and it's done on the back of the students. Despite that, we don't see the benefits of that in terms of our payments to the university. That hasn't stopped any kind of increases in tuition. And these are projects that pay for themselves in a few months, in a few years. Why is the university not putting its own money onto the table? Why are we the only ones paying for it?
Without a doubt, some of your funds are being used, or much of those which came about because of your contributions. But in fact, other funds are being used. There's an enormous amount of fund being spent on deferred maintenance, which is not coming from your contributions. But at the same time, we're most grateful that the students stepped up to the plate. So the situation you've described is simply not the case. I don't know whether the provost or...
Absolutely correct. The university is spending far beyond the fees that we collect from the students. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, since you're also a graduate student, I believe, is that this university is supporting the graduate program in a substantial way through tuition waivers. And so the investment that is not very visible is substantial in many ways. And so I personally feel very good. I've been in three institutions with that, but I can tell you the commitment the University of Illinois is making to students is really far beyond any other commitment I've seen in other places.
Yeah, you mentioned one thing which we are, in fact, working towards. That is, you save money in terms of energy as a college, for instance. Can those funds be redirected? What we're in the process of doing, and we're not quite there yet, is leaving the energy money with the college. If they save energy money, there's another graduate fellowship or more, or travel money, whatever it is that the college deems important. So we're not quite there yet, but we are migrating from where we were to that point. But thank you for your question.
We're looking forward to that. Is that going to happen July 1 as planned?
I'm not entirely in control of that, but that's the hope.
My name is Ben Barnes. I'm a graduate in mechanical engineering. And I wanted to point out that some of the most important issues to a lot of students on this campus are not only labor rights and environmental responsibility on this campus, but also among our vendors. To this end, we created the Vendor Code of Conduct about a year ago. And it landed on the president's desk there, and we haven't seen any action on that. And we're wondering if in this economic climate we can expect more delays justified by the economic crisis, or we'll see continued progress in ethical procurement.
I think one of the things you did see is that we did change the beverage contract, although, and I think the students, and you may have been among them, although I can't quite recall your face in those discussions, but I think we did respond, perhaps not at the pace you would like, perhaps not to all, your full point of view, but there has been some response.
But specifically on that document that was created to bring all those issues into one code of values that we're going to use in all our procurement practices.
It's in your way, isn't it? Yeah, that's in the president's office. So, it's not a good answer. I can only tell you where it is, okay? Please.
My name is Roger Serwey. I'm a graduate student in electrical engineering. I have a suggestion for the university to make money. The internet is very important for our education, undoubtedly so, and everyone who lives off campus needs to pay third-party providers like Comcast and Pavlov Media and whatnot to pay for internet access. I would gladly pay the university $40 a month for internet rather than paying them, because you have the infrastructure in place. For example, set up apartment buildings on campus like near the Armory. You have all this fiber laid everywhere. You have a great source of income that could help solve a lot of these money problems. Can you look into that?
Sure, Anderson. You wanted us to become a full service provider?
Yes.
Over the role of Comcast.
Yes. You have an internet backbone at the NCSA. You can do this really easily.
I think this gets to, sticking to our core businesses. And I'm not sure the financial model that you're proffering offers it works at all. But I don't know if there's anybody around.
We had not thought about Comcast, but the university has tried very hard. And as a matter of fact, when we speak about the challenge we have nowadays, we are talking about creating new revenue as number one priority, redeploying, and then eventually looking at cuts as the last priority. So creating new revenue has been a very active topic for discussion among the deans and the leadership in the institution. And so we are looking at continuous professional development, if you like, and making programs available over internet for students, or courses for students who may be off campus as another opportunity for us. Some programs, the College of Education has really been extremely successful in launching programs and courses that individuals had access to. And so this is really part of our core business, and we're looking at that. But at the same time, having said that, we're looking for good ideas, because creating new revenue is absolutely important to us.
Chancellor Herman,
please.
My name is Kevin Shaning. I work at the University of Illinois Alumni Association.
Hello, Kevin.
Yes, we finally meet. Now that I've got your undivided attention, I think we need to point out a big gap in this plan, and that is there's always been, as I've seen over the 15 years that I've worked here at the university, massive amounts of waste. And the people best able to spot that waste are sitting in this room, and there's no method by which to report it. Okay? And I know how this works. I've seen this happen before. This, we need to weather the storm, tighten our belts, what have you. That always results in a slice of the civil service ranks being cut off. And those people lose their jobs. I've known people who've been bumped out of jobs. because they were at the lowest ranks in the civil service classifications they were in. Okay? So I know how this works. Okay? And I work at the Alumni Association now for 3 years, the ivory tower, if you will. We have a $5 million payroll and 40 employees. Okay? I see 35,000 of that, and about half the people see less than, of that see less than 60,000. Okay, I saw Jack Pierce's report. That's what it said. So I'm quoting him. Now, let me give you the flip side of this deal here as far as cutting back and what have you. I don't think that's being done. I mean, our CEO, Lauren Taylor, has a townhouse in Chicago that's for his exclusive use because he doesn't have to get a hotel like everybody else. And I assure you that thing is not anywhere near Cabrini Green, okay? It's a rather extravagant perk. And there's all expense paid trips from some of our executive staff at the Alumni Association to cart people around to all these exotic locations and not have to use their benefits to do it, okay? Now, Dorinda Miller made an example of the child development lab, okay? My wife works there. She's a child care worker. She's very good at it. She loves that job. But for this, she gets paid $8.16 an hour. And they were requiring people to work off the clock, which we put a stop to. So if you calculate that, they were literally paying her less than minimum wage, okay? Now, granted, we all think we all have our own jobs are the most important jobs in this campus, or we'd like to think so. My wife has an important job. She's trying to make sure that these kids don't grow up and learn little Bernie Madoffs. Okay? So there's something clearly inequitable when I go to work and I see this bloated wealth being blown and our priorities of taking care of, let's say, these children at the child development lab. One of those buildings, by the way, does not have heat, working heat and air conditioning. Are you aware of that? So maybe that's something we ought to look into. And as far as, you know, our energy costs, I know, you know, Walmart has saved billions of dollars. They've already set the standard. All you got to do is go to their website and just look up what they've done. Automated switches, GPS on their trucks, what have you. These problems have already been worked out elsewhere. And to be perfectly frank with you, sir, my personal thing, and I'm here, I'm on the AFSCME executive board, but I'll just speak personally, that I've seen for 15 years how this university is run. And the very fact that we're having this Q&A, this town hall meeting, which we should have had a year or two ago, because I don't know if you've been keeping up with the newspapers, but I think there have been plenty of indications that the economy's been going in the toilet for the last 2 years, you have my vote of no confidence. That's all. Thank you.
Moving right along.
I'm David Olson. I'm a sophomore undergraduate College of Business, and I'm also a student hourly employee at Library IT. I just wanted to talk about something you mentioned on the slides, process improvement, business methodology, and one of the speakers mentioned that the university is a conservative institution and we have to, it's an opportunity to re-examine our programs.
Yes.
And one of the previous speakers, I think, was Professor Blair, mentioned something like free software in IT. Mm-hmm. And as an employee in IT, I think that's something that's really important. We have, at the library, as I've seen, many people are resistant to change and very conservative, as was mentioned. And so I think that it might be might behoove the university to push some people forward to change and to adopt some of these more cost-saving measures. And basically, what I'm saying is do some stuff that makes sense for the university. People might have to learn a few new things, but that's going to save, if that's going to save money, it's going to save jobs, it's going to reduce tuition. And I think there's a lot of small things that I've seen throughout the library system that could be eliminated and to save money. And I'm sure if that's applied throughout the university and some of these pet projects being eliminated, then if that's applied throughout the university, we could save a lot and it would be a great help in this situation.
Thank you. I think these are some of the things that, in fact, have been considered or are being considered, so we appreciate your support for that. Let's try and take a couple more on each side. We're at 7:30.
Good evening, Chancellor Herman. My name is Jerry Wright, and I'm a staff rep for AFSCME Council 31. As you see, we have no shortage of thoughts from AFSCME and our members. I'm glad to see the university do several things. I sent a letter some time back saying that you should reduce travel, that departments should cut out their annual holiday parties where some were spending a couple $1,000s. And I propose to you that a couple $1,000s over 100 departments adds up to a little bit of money. And a few, I call them bonuses, I don't know what you call them, but if I know President White gets an annual step of $10,000 a year and a $250,000 retention bonus after 5 years, that all those things can add up to real money, real money after they're all compiled. You said something in your comments about, you know, there may be some people that want to be obstacles opposed to going along with the flow. That was my interpretation of what you said. And I can tell you, I will be perceived as one of those obstacles because I propose to you the difference between a recession and a depression is which one of us is unemployed. And I have been unemployed, and I will fight this university until my retirement in August, at least, to make sure that if there are reductions in force here, that we do have our say at the table, and that my folks will have every opportunity to continue working. Because the unemployment line is not somewhere I want to see them. I hope you don't want to see them there. So I propose some additional things to you that to be considered. You've talked about flexibility. You've talked about what I call the sacred cows, but I thought I heard somebody say the endowments were off limit. I say that has to be put back on the table. Endowments have to be looked at as a way to keep this university funded and running. I have proposed in other meetings with management at this campus that a surcharge be applied to athletic events. Again, that might raise $4-5 million if we add a $5 or $10 charge to a ball game. But after $4-5 million there, next thing you know, we got $1 billion, possibly, at least a few million. And a few million may pay a few bonuses, but I know it's going to keep a lot of my people working, and that's my interest. I also happen to be a resident of Vermillion County, and I'm fortunate enough to have U of I as my closest neighbor. Our land borders over there. But I also know some 10 years ago that U of I literally lost track of that 600-acre plot of land. Literally. You were doing nothing. It's where the observation towers used to be that you sent signals into space and listened for response. Well, when that project went away after Ronald Reagan cut funding and everything, you lost track. You, the university, lost track of that land. Some 10 years ago, you found it, and the number one objective there now is to study the impact coyotes are having on red fox. That's fine. That seems a little... I could tell them what it is. The red foxes are living in the ditches now because the coyotes run them out of the woods. But there's property that you have all over this state from alumni, from people that love the sports that you provide to this state, whoever, have left this university thousands of acres. Yeah. You do farm that land over there that's tillable.
We do, but some of it.
But I suggest that there may be other land that you don't know you've got any longer, that you need to do an inventory of your property and eliminate some of that property that you're not utilizing.
Let me thank you for your thoughts. Let me try and there are some serious issues in that discussion. One is people need to, and it conjuncts a little bit with an earlier question. One is the Alumni Association and the University of Illinois Foundation are separate organizations. They don't report either to me or to the president of the university, number one. Number two, when it comes to giving money, you spoke about the endowment being off limits. People give money for specific purposes. They enter into a contract with the foundation, with the university, to give scholarships, to give professorships, to name an auditorium, to pay for a building. Those contracts are, in fact, inviolate. Whether or not there is some flexible endowment pool, it is very, very small. And the question is, what happens now in a time when, in fact, we need to go out and raise money for those very same purposes? Should we invest it first in some other areas? So I think we need to understand those things. We also need to understand that athletics is basically an independent operation here. Whether or not the traffic will bear at a time like this, whether we should be increasing cost of tickets, I'm not sure that's the right thing to do, and whether or not money should flow from auxiliaries to us, that's basically a very difficult proposition. We have pretty much a firewall in that regard.
I have a couple other recommendations.
Well, I understand, but we are reaching...
I do have a couple other recommendations. One is that we bargained with the university the cost of parking, 0.7%.
Yeah.
0.7% of one of my members' in wages is the same amount as it is of yours. But yet you said the higher paid people on this campus won't pay that. Now I'm being told that parking is facing a deficit that's going to have to come back, that you want to come back and ask us to pay more.
In fact,
no, we're not going to do that. So that's another place you can find money. One last suggestion to you.
There are other people here to speak. Thank you very much.
One last suggestion to you, sir.
You're being rude to your colleagues.
I have been here 15 years. And in 15 years, I have taken grievances to the university level to be processed prior to arbitration. And I want you to know, in that 15 years, we have yet to get one affirmative decision out of that department. Now, I suggest you can eliminate that department and save yourself a hell of a lot of money, because we haven't taken a grievance to arbitration yet that we've lost.
Thank you.
Chancellor.
As long as you've given me the opportunity to say something in regard to the parking fees, the provost and I, in fact, did make a decision to assess parking fees to the extent we could based on salaries. So we, in fact, did recognize the differential in salary as best we could and still try to keep parking afloat.
Chancellor Herman.
How are you?
I'm good. Panel, members of the audience, my name is Terry Townsend. I rise tonight to represent that group that's called the taxpayer. That seems to be a group that's not in this equation. Right behind me. Thank you for the support. I've been around here for 40 years, and as an alumnus, I can tell you that much of what's been said has been said over and over and over since the office of chancellor was created in 1967. Now I'm going to read something, and it's about my constituent group, and then I want to talk about some of the concerns that you have in a real short summary, 2 minutes. If you go to layoffs, once again, as a symbolic gesture, I would suggest that you start in the president's office, in the chancellor's office, and you make some cuts there. President Obama just did that. You need to set the tone. As a former public official, that's what I did. We didn't do cuts based on priorities. When I ordered cuts, they were across the board, from the CEO to the janitor. That was fair. There is clearly tonight some unhappiness with some things. But in most organizations, African Americans are the last to be hired and the first to be fired. Alumni across the country, African American alumni, we will be watching very closely. We hope that that doesn't happen here. We have looked at the university level. There's African American hiring is almost non-existent. Your own records. There's only 8 African Americans in the employment learner programs. That is the worst in 40 years. So I can say to you, and as members of the panel, you know I've done my part. I continue to do my part. And I think we all have to do our part. But I will come and say the things that need to be said. The taxpayer is starting to look at this. And I, of course, I could say, well, get rid of the affirmative action officer on the university level because there's no hiring. I can say that. But a more poignant comment would be that the continuing process improvement, that process that has been brought here by President White, is used in many corporations. I'm trained in it. It's not working. What you heard from all of these wonderful people, your team members, was that a continuous process improvement that they don't know anything about. These people should be on the panel with you. They should be communicating with you on a day-to-day basis on ways to save money. I wonder what kind of process we're implementing. You need to think about that. Lastly, if you pick up the New York Times today, on the front page, you'll see states are having more problems with Medicaid. States are going to continue to have more problems with meeting their own costs. I stayed on the Hill for 20 years. I have friends there. I know what they're talking about. Some money is not coming back. But do we have a real process? Not to downsize. I don't want anybody to lose a job. But a real process where we can be more efficient? I don't think so. And you really need to take a look at that. Thank you.
Terry, just a word. Terry's been a great member of this community, and I take his words very seriously, and we'd like to hear those suggestions. We are well beyond the hour, so one more on each side, please.
Thank you very much, and good evening. My name is Trent Morrow. I'm a student senator and an undergraduate here. And going off some of the points of the previous question, when we as taxpayers and voters and citizens of Illinois are faced with some of the consequences of the economic crisis, the state's budget shortfall, $2 billion, and the effects of that, what measures should we favor as voters for the state to raise more money and help solve the university's financial problems? Are there any measures such as raising specific taxes or specific budget cuts that the university favors or that we as voters might favor?
Well, it's not up to me to dictate your choices, but I can tell you that I think some form of tax increase is the only way for us out of the present financial circumstance in the state. But that's one person's opinion. Whether or not you want to march to that drummer is your own choice. Because the simple truth is, while everybody's been saying we don't want tax increases, there has been a tax increase passed. It's called tuition. It's a tax on the middle class. And we struggle. We've more than doubled tuition, student aid, in the past 6 years as a way to meet
keep these doors open, and that we must do as a public land grant institution. So I think there's been this migration for those who go to universities to pay, if you will, user fees, which we call tuition. I think that's much to the shame of the nation. I was very happy to see President Obama, one of the early actions was to increase the Stafford loans. Hopefully the Pell Grants will be increased even more so. Those have been hard fought over the years. But we need to do something to keep the doors of this university open to all economic classes. Last question on this side.
Hi, my name is Michael Simeone. I'm a doctoral student in American Literature. I'm also a member of the Graduate Employees Organization. I didn't anticipate having the last question, and so I'll change what I was going to ask.
Go ahead.
Because I have this rare privilege. Well, this is also something that I'm interested in as well, and it speaks to the goals that you brought up at the very beginning of this session. Is that strange sound coming from this microphone?
I think you just shut the mic off.
Okay. And so we were talking about dialogue at the beginning, and so I'm kind of interested in seeing this brought to a satisfactory closure for people. And so you heard a lot of feedback from the group, and I'd be interested in, and I know I'm not... No one's demanding promises and things on paper and signatures, so that's not what I'm trying to suggest. But from the group, I would like to hear specific things that you all heard from the crowd today, and I know it had its warm moments and its cool moments, but I would like to know what things you learned or feedback that was significant to you that you think might be worth pursuing or that may be worth further consideration or that you feel is now important to you. Basically, what is the net practical gain that we have kind of put together moving forward from this dialogue? And I'd like to hear that from you all, and I hope people are interested in hearing that from you all as well.
We can go all the way down the table. I think that's a good point. One is we will try to provide some kind of a summary of what we've heard tonight. But speaking personally, I think we've heard some very good specific suggestions on actions that might help us operate better. I think one of the loudest voice, if you will, is the worry that one group will be impacted unfairly over another. And I think that's the theme that was repeated by maybe a third of the speakers. And this is the issue where we need to go forward as a community, and how that plays out is going to be extremely important. We need to provide a way to get more input to us and continue the dialogue. Yeah.
Do you anticipate having another one of these kinds of meetings and throughout the semester as we try to work things out?
Frankly, one, that depends on what we get in. And two, as information becomes available to us, then I think should be a cause for another meeting. Why don't we just go down the line? Jacqueline, Nick?
Yeah. Sure. So, I mean, I've seen a lot of interest this evening from people of all different backgrounds, which is great. I think that people want to be included in decisions and the discussions, which is good to hear. And I think that being involved and staying engaged with your representatives, whether it be, your student government, whether it be your, AP council, or whoever it may be, the administration, I think that making sure your voice is heard, writing letters and so forth, and, staying engaged is very important. Specifically, people have brought a lot of great ideas forward, and I've taken down several, and I hope that we can bring these ideas forward and work towards the better of the university and the better of the people here.
That was Jacqueline O'Day, the student body president.
I was having a conversation with some of the staff people who work with me earlier today, and one of the topics they came up was this question about whether faculty or higher paid employees would be willing to take cuts or wage freezes so that other people might not lose their jobs. And one of the points that I made in that conversation was that it isn't just altruism that's involved here. It's the fact that I think most faculty understand that without the people who plow the sidewalks, the people who repair the leaky toilets, the people who type our letters, the people who do our Xeroxing, et cetera, our lives as faculty aren't going to be very satisfying either. And so I think echoing something the Chancellor has said a couple of times, I think we really do need to see this as something that we're all in together. And I think if any group thinks that if they benefit by keeping their jobs or their salaries, but other people lose, we really do lose as an institution. And I think one thing that's been very clear that I've learned from the discussion is that people who actually work closer to the ground on some issues probably do have more insight into things that could be done better, where there is waste, where there are unnecessary expenses. And I think there does need to be more listening and more learning from people who sometimes do see things that people, I'll say, higher up the ivory tower, don't always see.
Nick Burbles, the chair of the Faculty Senate.
To add to what we've heard, because I guess these are messages we all heard from here, I would say what I take back with me is, of course, one challenge. We all agree that our own people at all levels, at the lowest levels, have many answers to our questions. The question that I have and what I would like to challenge us with is how to get these answers all the way up to us, how to create an environment where your ideas can make it to those levels where decisions are made, and how to get your involvement in a meaningful way. I mean, this is absolutely critical. The other thing, of course, that we all agree on, and we've heard it today, is that we as a community need to face this challenge together. And that means that those who lead will have to lead in symbolic and visible ways as we make sacrifices. And also, we need to make sure that everybody participates in that, even in very small ways. The size of the problem is big, and it will require all of us to come together to solve it. But it is true that we need to be very thoughtful about the ability of people to contribute in solving this problem, financially speaking. And so that has to enter into whatever solutions we develop.
And that was Provost Linda Katehi. Renee Romano next.
My name again is Renee Romano. I'm the Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs. There are a couple things I heard loud and clear tonight. One was the ideas about energy conservation, and the other was about, particularly from the civil service employees, the concern about losing jobs. So I wanted to say a couple of things. So I'm walking away from here really with a renewed commitment on both of those things. As I said, my area is student affairs. I was here tonight to primarily respond to any questions from students that they might be concerned about their basic services on campus. Student affairs is primarily funded from student fees, which isn't from state funds, yet we have to be very, very concerned about increasing student fees. We want to keep those at a minimum. So there are two areas. The energy can be conserved drastically in student affairs, but also I wanted to mention for those civil service people that are concerned that the civil service employees are critical in student services in areas such as the residence halls, in dining. I mean, we are committed to feeding, for example, 8,500 students 3 meals a day, every day. And so some of those areas, those positions, are most critical in student affairs. I heard the provost talk about, and we have talked about, attrition, using attrition wherever we can, and actually moving people around. So we may have some flexibility to make certain that people don't lose their jobs if in other areas as I said, where civil service employees are critical to the basic services for students that they are already paying for, and that we are under contract with those students to provide those services. So the two things I heard were energy conservation, we need to have renewed commitment to that. And I believe that we are doing some things that is going to save us millions of dollars over time. And the other is being concerned about people losing their jobs. So I think I know I have renewed commitment, and I know everyone at the table does as well.
Next is Tom Corder, who represents academic professionals.
I guess I take away a couple things. One is as is kind of from two sides. I mean, I'm an employee like a lot of you, So I have a full-time job, and then I do this as a volunteer activity. On that side, as chair of the council, what I heard is that I need to just keep up my efforts to try to represent those people that I'm elected to represent, to try to do what I can to make sure that that those people are protected, that those people have, if certain positions are taken away, that there are opportunities where how they can be reemployed in different ways, like it's been talked about. That's kind of been one big thing for me in this effort that we've had in this planning process, is to try to make sure that that's happening. And I know Human Resources is doing a lot of things. They've talked about already some plans they've started to develop in that area, and I think that's going to be important. And the other side is, as an employee, I'm going to go back to my unit and push for my involvement at that level, because to me, that's the thing that I start to wonder about. How well is this message that I think, in the meetings I've had with the chancellor and the provost and the president, I've heard good things, and I've thought they've talked to me honestly, and now I need to make sure that what they're saying is being heard down at my level. The department chair, the dean is hearing that, and they are making the kind of plans that will, you know, do the best things going forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. And as Tom said, the open communications is unprecedented here. And I think administration has done their best to begin dialogue. We don't know where we're going because the state can't tell us. So it's very difficult to get a definite answer. One thing I can assure you of that I've heard in these meetings, for lack of better terms, is we are all going to leave some skin on the street. It's going to take some sacrifice. Does that mean jobs? I can't tell you that. They don't know that. But yes, to be all-inclusive, I would encourage you, get a hold of us. Talk to us. I can't answer for administration, but I'm sure other people will be talked to in the future on this issue. This is a first time out. It's an opportunity to open the door for dialogue and communication. But as you've seen the tree limbs out on the street, if you dig in and take a position right now before we know what's happening, you're surely going to break. So be open-minded and come in with solutions, because this is a university family. It's all of our problem.
That's Marty Bryson, president of the State Employees Advisory Council, a statewide group.
These two guys did. I've been on the Staff Advisory Council now for more years than I can remember. We hold elections from time to time. Apathy across this campus is widespread. People just don't seem to want to get involved until we reach this kind of level. I would ask that you bring concerns to the Staff Advisory Council. Get involved in more than just your job. If this place means a lot to you, more than just a paycheck, get involved in something. We welcome anybody to the council meetings, and we definitely welcome any recommendations any of you may have. And I appreciate all of you being here tonight.
And that's Tom Martin, the president of the Staff Advisory Council, representing civil service employees.
We've heard, I came here a decade ago as provost, and you know about an institution from afar, and you see that it's great, but you never really understand what makes it work until you come here and talk to the people. That's some of you. It's a whole panoply of individuals. But at the end of the day, this institution is driven by people. That's certainly reflected in our expenditures, but that's sort of a simple-minded representation of understanding how each and every one of us contribute to make this institution what it is. And each year when we give out awards at retirements, the people who have been here 25, 30, 35, 40 years, we have an opportunity to celebrate contributions across the entire spectrum of this university. So, if you will, that's a statement about people first. We've talked about people having the ability to pay. We recognize that we have in the past. Certainly the absence of information, which is the state we're in, if you will, in the sense that we don't have a lot of information from the state, creates the opportunity for all sorts of speculation. And we've heard some of that on the street. We hear it on the newscast. We've heard some of it tonight. But at the end of the day, I think everybody here and those who are empowered to make decisions, such as the deans, understand that this institution is, in fact, driven by people. So if you will, I, My plea would be to resist the sensational. We've, in past crises, for instance, in 2001, 2002, largely things were handled through redeployment. And you heard redeployment spoken of, you heard retraining spoken of. The idea is to care about the people that have and continue to make this institution great. So with that, I thank you all for coming, and I thank the panelists for participating. And we look forward to your suggestions, and a summary will come out. Thank you very much for this evening.
And that's University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Campus Chancellor Richard Herman, Provost Linda Katahi. They took an hour and a half of questions and suggestions for dealing with the current and potential budget problems on campus after a half-hour presentation of the state of affairs or what's known about them. This town hall meeting is being archived along with support information on the University of Illinois website at illinois.edu if you'd like to share or reference it. And we would like to thank the staffs of Folinger Hall, Sites, Atlas, the campus units, the Chancellor's Office, our Director of Operations, Mike Pritchard, on site here, radio engineer Rick Bigler, Todd Gleason, and Henry Frayne, our Technical Director, back at Campbell Hall, and you for listening. I'm Jay Pierce. This has been a live broadcast of a town hall meeting on the University of Illinois budget situation, and you've heard it on WILL, AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3, Urbana, as well as will.illinois.edu. We're the broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois, and good night from Folinger Hall.